I think I'm going to get a lot of joy in seeing the reactions of my clients of what the new space looks like. Because what they have now compared to what they're getting,
Yeah.
what I mean, it's just, it's insane.
Hello, and welcome to the Physical Preparation Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Robertson, and I'm joined on the line today by Tony Gentilcore. Man, me and Tony go way back. I think we first met in the early 2000s, hung out with our boy, Eric Cressy. I remember we were hanging out at their house one day. I've never seen so many egg whites cooked at one point in time. I think Tony had 12 egg whites in the skillet at one point. But man, me and this guy go way back. I'm super excited to have him back on. He is one of the original co-founders of CSP, Cressy Sport Performance. He is now working on building out his own gym called The Core Collective, and it is going to be a sick setup. Very much similar to what we're doing at IFAST, where Tony will train out of there, but also have independent contractors. They're going to have a space for massage therapy, for physical therapists, a chiropractor, mindset coaching. They're going to have it all under one roof. And man, in this show, we cover all the things. We start off by talking about Tony's wide-ranging past, how he got started as a coach. We'll talk about writing articles for T-Nation and what the internet was like in the early 2000s. We talk about the evolution of his training philosophy, which I think is really interesting. And, you know, look, we're all getting older. So how does that change not only our training philosophy, but how we train ourselves? So we'll talk about how Tony has really shifted and, you know, maybe not softened so much, but just gotten a little bit wiser as how he trains. And then finally, we talk a lot about going out on his own, starting Core Collective, and just where he's at in life. So amazing episode. It was great to catch up. I will tell you, number one, if you have little people in the car, there might be a few bad words in there, so be wary of that. Number two, if you are watching the video or if the audio is a little bit sus, we had a few moments where the audio capture flaked out on us a little bit. So hopefully it's not too bad. I don't think it is. But if there is a few hiccups here and there, I apologize. We're always doing our best, but sometimes technology doesn't work for us. But man, awesome episode, some great lessons. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll jump into this awesome new episode with my guy, Tony Gentilcore. Did you know that in any given year, 40% of the trainers and coaches in our industry will leave our industry? Maybe that's why it seems like almost every day I talk to trainers and coaches who are frustrated. Maybe they're frustrated with the results they're getting. Maybe they're frustrated because they don't have trusted resources to learn from. And maybe they're frustrated because they simply don't have enough clients and wonder how long they'll be able to stay in the industry. So if this sounds anything like you, let me tell you how I can help. My Complete Coach Certification was created for trainers and coaches just like you. People who are serious about the results they get and know that becoming a better coach can directly translate to a bigger bottom line. This certification is going to take the last 20 plus years of my life's work and put it all into one massive course. In the cert, you'll learn how to use my R7 system to create seamless, integrated, and efficient programs for clients and athletes of all shapes and sizes. You'll learn the exact progressions, regressions, and coaching cues I use in the gym to help your clients squat, hinge, press, and pull with awesome technique. You'll learn my streamlined assessment process that will help you determine the exact movements your clients should be performing when they come in the gym. And last but not least, you'll learn how to create relationships and build rapport with virtually everyone you train so you can get the best possible results. Of course, there's a lot more that I cover, but that should give you a pretty good idea of what the cert is all about. Now here's the thing, spots for the cert only open twice per year for a limited time. But if you join my free insiders list now, you'll be able to save $200 when my next group opens. To get on the insiders list, just head over to CompleteCoachCertification.com. Again, that's CompleteCoachCertification.com, and then stay tuned for our launch emails very soon. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope you'll join us when the next Complete Coach Certification launches. Tony, man, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Excited to have you on. Excited to catch up with you here today. For somebody that's been living under a rock for, I don't know, the last 15, 20-ish years, You tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I have a question first. I forget what number appearance this is of mine, but I know Ryan Gosling was recently on SNL and he just joined the five time. I don't think I'm at five times yet.
I don't think maybe you're three? At five yet either. I'd have to go back and look, but maybe three.
Well, anyways, to answer your question, what'd you ask? What did you tell me to talk about myself for a couple seconds? Is that what you just asked?
Yeah,
you and I go back quite a ways. No, with the industry, like I came up in early 2000s when me, you, and Eric and et cetera were all in these various forums and talking about, hey, yeah, I like to lift. You like to lift. What do you do? No, what do you do? What's foam rolling? What's mobility? How does that help? What about functional?
I like
training?
Corrective
what do you
exercise.
Think about that?
Do you like corrective exercise?
Actually,
that was a good
fasting
one.
Was a thing at that
do point. You activate your glutes?
But so I came up in a time where it was like,
oh yeah,
it was kind of sort of at the beginning of the internet where
it was just
where we had
on.
The ability to people we otherwise would never have done so in the first place. And I was in the middle of nowhere in New York. So I grew up Finger Lakes region of New York. So anyone not familiar with that is like the epitome of, say, central New York. It's like right dead center New York, small town called Groton. The closest notable city to me was Syracuse. So middle of nowhere. Like I was just a little personal trainer, corporate personal trainer in this. And I was fiddling around there and moved to Connecticut where Eric had just graduated from, Eric Cressy had just graduated from University of Connecticut. And he reached out and said, hey, dude, I just did an interview at this place and they're looking for another trainer. You should think about applying. I know I'm thinking about leaving or moving on or to the next page of your career. Maybe this will work out. So I went out and interviewed, and I might have a story on a previous podcast with you, but I then came back and was offered the job. I came back to New York and had to have a sort of awkward conversation at that stage. We're talking 2006 or 2005. Parents saying, I met this guy on the internet. I'm moving to Connecticut. So nothing felt like anything weird or embarrassing was happening or no, I was in any danger or anything, but it wasn't very common to just randomly meet and move to two states over or one state over. But it worked out. I worked at Ridgefield for a little under a year, and then we both moved to Boston. As most people know, we co-founded and helped open Cressy Sports Performance along with Pete Dupuy. And I was there from 2007 at the start to roughly, 2015 is when I left. So I was there for about 8 years. I just realized that I've been away from Cressy Sports before I had been there, which is kind of weird. But it's just weird to think about how much older we are now. And within that time, I was trying to figure out what my career, what I'm about, and what I can do to kind of further my career as far as not just coaching. So I gravitated to things, which at that point was really what everyone did. It's a little different now. Wow. Lots of different avenues of media you can gravitate to. So I was able to start doing a bit of writing on my own and started writing
scary
publications. And eventually, like I said, I'd left in 2015 and then opened up my own space here in Brookline in Boston, small training studio, which is where I've been for the past 8 years, just kind of head down coaching here and there. I think you can attest to this. Like when you have a family, when you have kids, it is quite different. I was just at my Boyle seminar this past weekend, and it was nice to get feel important for just like maybe 10 minutes where people came up to introduce themselves, say, hi, I love reading your stuff. I haven't been writing all the years because life has just kind of gotten in the way and throw away. But, I certainly would like to get back to it at some point. But yeah, just been coaching people, mostly generally my typical avatar, the client that I train nowadays, is more so someone in their 40s and 50s, working professional. They have a few niggles here and there. We're being in Boston. I work with a fair number of runners. Yesterday, for a number of my guys, they like to lift heavy things and feel athletic. But certainly, a lot of my job is working around injuries and helping them find their trainable menu, which I recall is a phrase that I stole off your podcast a number of years ago with one Chris Chase, and he mentioned that. Yeah, and now I'm 6 weeks away from Open Space Core Collective, where we're kind of a dual service. We're under one of the appointment
personal training by other coaches. Like, any employees, they're all going to be independent contractors and they're all going to run their own. I just don't want to manage people. I have no interest. And I've been very fortunate in the years I've had very competent coaches and people run, and there's been very little drama, you know, with this format. But what's going to be a little bit different is now on the other side of the gym. So I'm moving from a 500 square foot studio to now 5,500 square feet, which in Boston is massive. It's two thirds of that located for dedicated training space. Like, I'm bringing in, I'm going to have six half racks in there. It's going to have connected with pull-up bars, and there's going to be some turf, and essentially it's just going to be barbells, kettlebells, and people stuff, pushing stuff and throwing stuff. But on the other side of the wall, we built office space for therapy clinic. So we have a clinic, and that they're going to open up a satellite facility with us. My wife, who's a psychologist, is bringing her private practice over to the same center. And then we also have plans on pelvic floor therapy and hopefully a massage therapist at some point. Like, that's actually been the one cog of the wheel that's been very hard to fill. It's just finding that, I have a few colleagues in the city with non-moving massage therapists. We don't want crystals involved. No offense to people using, but we want sports massage therapy. And wow, they're really hard to find. And,
yeah, that's huge. That's huge.
I think we might have someone in the wings. I'm actually going next week to get a massage. So I'm hoping via Wings, actually. One of my clients recommended her, which is great. So the new space is going to be your normal personal business, people getting after it there. But I think what's going to be a nice separation is, or separating us from other places, the fact that everything is going to be under one roof with regards to physical therapy, but also mindset too, and psychology. So I envision, my wife and I envision quite a bit of cross-pollination of clients. Like, I will obviously be sending any people who need a little bit of DLC to the physical therapy clinic, and likewise send people over to the other side of the wall as well. Not to mention my wife being there. She's probably more of a meathead than I am in terms of lifting weights and exercising. And she's always advocating to her patients the importance of physical activity and care. So it's very stress inducing as well, because we're 6 weeks away. No, we're at the phase now where we're probably maybe two or 3 weeks away from ordering the equipment, bringing the furniture in.
Yeah, sure.
And stuff, like, it up and making it look like Tony. Like, I have some ideas that will make it, it'll be an obvious gym that I will own. They'll be just told that, oh, that's pretty Tony right there. So we're hoping it's going to be a pretty cool place for people to train at.
I mean, you touched on so many things. I'm just going to kind of start at the top and kind of work our way back. No, that's great. That's a great overview. I feel like we could just turn it off now and people know everything about you. But there are some areas I want to dive deeper, because, I mean, we've known each other so long. And yes, I would just love to start with hearing if you can tell me what your first article was at T Nation and how that came about. Was it just Eric was writing and he said, hey, I got a guy? Or, like, you know, how did that come about?
Kind of. Like, you and I both know Eric is a different level of work ethic. So I often joke about this. And I can joke about this. He busts his balls and whatever. But, you know, when we lived together in Connecticut and Boston, we lived together in total for about 2 years. And I recall many times, like, we were both working, like, he was working, we were both very busy, but I could turn it off. He had a little time turning it off, and he'll tell you that too. But I can recall many times where I'd come home, or I'd be home on the weekend or on a Friday weekend, and I'd be bored, and he'd be writing a book in his room. But that's just what he would do. And so being around him for 2 years, it was very hard for him not to rub off on me. Hey, I could be a little bit more proactive and figuring out what's going to help develop a little bit more passive income. What's going to be the next obvious stage of my career other than just being a personal trainer? Writing bug hit to quite him. I mean, his mom was an English book. He already had a leg up on a lot of people in terms of his ability to write and write well and write. That it wasn't quite as easy for me to do that. But I started writing, I think I had a Blogspot blog. It was like tonyjohncoy.blogspot.com, something like that. Yeah. Blogspot. Yes. So I started there.
Sure.
And I also had a client at the time in Boston. I was working at, my first job in Boston was at a place called Sports Club LA, which eventually turned into us. But Sports Club LA, very posh, sexy, training facility or that where a lot of one famous were in Boston, they were trained there. It was like a happy hour there. It was like that type of establishment before training, but it was also just a nice place to be part of the social network in Boston. But one of my clients at the time was an employee at the Boston Herald and had mentioned to me that they were looking for somebody to provide online fitness tips on their website, on the Boston. So like, I was like, hey, like I do a little bit of writing. I know a thing or two on what to do, what to do and stuff like that. So they gave me a bit of a trial error of writing a little bit on, and they liked what I was writing. And then I kind of got carte blanche with what I wanted to do with it. It basically became my personal blog on the Boston Herald website. I still have people that will reach out and say, I remember you when you were on the Boston Herald. I was like, that is
there's so a much long time ago. Yeah.
So I started doing some writing there, and then that led into trying to get into T Nation, which at the time and still is. I mean, Nation has quite as big of a entity as they were in the early 2000s, just because there's just more things to read on the internet. But yeah, there's just way more competition. But in the early 2000s, up to 2010, like that was the spot to get your fitness. It was really top quality. They had good writers, got actual coaches. And that was kind of like when you were able to get your name on that site, it was a big deal. And Eric, I think at that point, had already been writing for them for two, if not three, I think we were already writing. And I submitted something that was obviously denied. I think that's just the way it goes. They've denied a few times. And I think if I recall, my first article there was Program Design for Dummies, which I think it was just like a very simple, like, template. Okay, if you don't know how to write your own, that's kind of how you would do it. And here's what it entails. And I think if I read it now, I'd probably change it. But the basic principles were still there that I was head nod to. But that was the first one. And I remember TC Luma was my editor, and he gave me advice. And he's people want to be, they want to learn. They that's why they come to this website. Like we provide great content. You want to learn about training and nutrition and supplements, etc. Yeah. This is the site to do it, but they want to be entertained. Yeah. And that's something that I really grasped on, permission to be me to a degree. I didn't have to be, because I am not, I mean, I know my stuff, but I'm not like deep in that. And that I don't breathe, eat and drink strength and conditioning. I'm not a real, that's just not how I operate. Like I get deep in the weeds on things, but I can talk about complex topics, water it down a little bit, but then add some pop culture, some movie references and self-deprecating humor and make it entertaining and relatable. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of my articles and my writing styles, it came across as very, not that other people who wrote more research-based stuff weren't authentic, but I mean.
No, I think that's something you always did such an amazing job of. Like you always did an amazing job of that. And I think, man, when you read an Eric Cressy article or a Christian Thibodeau article, man, you got world-class coaches on that website. But I think one thing you always did a really good job of, almost every article you wrote, there was one moment in an article that you would write, I could guarantee it would make me laugh out loud. I don't know if anybody else could say that. It's like, absolutely. But that was part of it, right? I know if I'm going to read something by Tony, I'm going to take something away from this, and it's probably going to make me laugh. So that helps. It helps.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of the idea. Yeah. That definitely helps. And I think I remember Anna, Eric's wife, when I was at Cressy Sports, she's like, I don't read Eric's stuff. I read your stuff. And it wasn't because it was like more informative. Right? It was just a little bit more entertaining. But I mean, but Eric, everyone has a little bit of humor in their writing. And this isn't to say that we're all that you're Eric or Christian or Berardi or Dan John. I mean, Dan John, I mean, hits it all the time. No, I don't think I put in poop jokes, but I think just like TV, like current TV trends or any like current movies or.
I love it, dude. Okay. So here's a fun question. I would love for you to explain your training philosophy then, right? If you had to give me your like business calling card verbally in 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there, give me that. Versus what your calling card is today. How has your philosophy evolved in the last 15, 20 years?
Back then, I was really more about, and I think how every coach evolves coming from whatever time frame we're talking about. Like when I started in this industry, I was in my mid-20s, into my late 20s.
So I think it was like, let's train hard. Let's get after it. Let's don't worry about being hurt severe. Let's train hard. And I think that was my mentality back then. I think it was a little, this isn't to say that I didn't put any thought into what I was doing, but I was like, no, we're going to back squat. We're going to deadlift. We're going to bench. We're going to get strong and let's just do it. Like show up. And of course, like hurting people, certainly I would respect if they were, if their shoulder hurt, I would work. But I think like, let's just get the movement patterns in, make sure we're hitting the movement patterns, do some work, and then we'll kick ass and take names. Now that I'm older with my own training and with that of my clients, it's still a little bit of that. Like I think a lot of people, one of the benefits that I have in this industry now is that because I've been doing it for so long, I have a lot of blog posts out there. I have a lot of articles out there. So my stuff is still out there. And so a lot of our self-selecting clients, like they kind of know, they read my stuff for a reason. I talk about deadlifts. I talk about how can we progress those? Like, how do we match it with your leverages or how can we make them like fit your ability level? So they know when they come to me, like what they're going to get, what they're going to deadlift. We're going to throw stuff and push stuff. But I'm a little more conscientious and a little bit more aware of that trainable menu for people. I get asked a lot of times, particularly when I present at NCA events, and people know my background with Cressy Sports Performance and working with mostly athletes when I was there. They go, what's being an athlete? And it was funny, to give credit where it's due, Mike Boyd had the greatest response ever to that just this past weekend when I went to his seminar. How do you define anyone gets paid for a living? He's like, this isn't to say athletes aren't getting paid, but that's different. Like anyone who has a job and they hurt an adult. And I was like, that's really the type of individual I hurt in them or life and they can't work. Like that would suck. So part of a lot of my job working around things now, like I said, my typical avatar now, the type of individual I work with, are in their 40s and 50s. I have some young people. I have my school kids. I have a couple 20-year-olds. They're in their early 40s and yeah, they want to get after it. I'm not babying them per se. It's really more around like helping them just feel a little bit better and really instilling in them. I stole this phrase from Dan John, but I say it to my clients all the time. Easy training is good training. Like my goal for you, my goal for my clients is like a session and you feel like you could do more. Like I get it all the time. Like I do a session with a client. I say, okay, that's it. You're done. And they look at me like, really? That's it? What? And I'm like, see ya. Bye. Like to me, that's a perfect session because I know the likelihood that they're going to recover from that session is going to be fairly high. And the likelihood they're going to be able to come back and repeat that is going to be fairly high. And that I want that consistent training. So this isn't to say that they aren't questioning their decisions sometimes. Like they're lifting significant weight. Like they're straining, like they're putting in some effort, but I'm not killing them. And so I think that's the difference, my philosophy now, as opposed to me 15, 20 years ago. I didn't really put a lot of that. Let's just, what do you do last week? Let's do more. What did you do last week? Let's do more. Whereas now I could get two shits off. I'm looking at a trend of workouts, but not week to week. Like I want to see that trend increase over 6 months, 8 months, a year, not week to week, if that makes sense. So
right.
I'm a big fan of sub-maximal training for my clients. Like I just don't think it's worth it. I don't see the point. If I make someone's 3 reps max, like they're 1 rep max, I'm going to be testing it all the time. And lo and behold, it does happen. I don't know about you, but sometimes I just roll the punches. Like someone comes in, a handful of times a year, someone comes to a session and they are feeling great and like weight's flying up. I'm like, fuck it. Let's test. Let's go. A couple weeks ago, he had this big business trip coming up where he had to go to the West Coast, California. Then he was flying to India. Then he was going to, and then he was, it was like this crazy. I was like, how the hell are you pulling this off? But before he went, he was like, I feel good. It was like literally the session before he left. He hit 315 for a double on the trap bar.
If you're enjoying today's podcast and not already subscribed to the Robertson Training Systems newsletter, what are you waiting for? When you sign up, you'll get immediate access to materials that will help you write better programs, motivate people outside of the gym, and improve how your clients move and feel. Plus, the RTS newsletter is the only place where I announce up-and-coming events like virtual summits, live seminars, and my program design mentorship. And last but not least, I hate spam as much as you do, so I will only email you when I've got something valuable to deliver.
something that will make you a better athlete, trainer, or coach. So if you're not already subscribed, head over to robertsontrainingsystems.com and register for our newsletter right now, today. Now, that's enough for me. Let's get back into this week's episode. Okay, so my next question, as we're talking about evolutions, how has your training evolved over the years? Because I know, I remember, I mean, we all came from a certain time in the internet where if you weren't like jacked and bloated and trap barring and deadlifting, well, not even trap barring at that point, we're just deadlifting as heavy as possible all the time. I just love to hear how your, no trap bars, no, you, if it's not a straight bar, let's not talk about it. But I'd love to hear how your training has evolved over the years. Because part of it too, like I'm sure you've learned with Gen Pop clients, 40s, I can't imagine 50, but you know, I'm on my way there. You like, you accumulate some stuff, right? Things happen. You accumulate some aches and pains. So I'd love to hear how your training has evolved over the years.
So I would say I still like getting, I still like lifting pretty heavy. I like to, I still stick to the, yeah, I still stick to the big three. I've never competed. I have no interest in, but I still, I would still say the of my training is still deadlift, squat, bench, with emphasis on the deadlift, because that's really the only thing, only one I can brag about. I'm 47, and I still like to leave like that. My clients, they see I'm doing what they're doing. So I think there's a lot of power now. Like I can say definitively, like very rarely myself in terms of like the exercises I prescribe. Like I'm similar to you. Like I'm very boring with the type of exercises I have my people do. I probably have a grouping of 10, 12, maybe 16 exercises that I stick to. So like, if you get good at these particular exercises and we play in set rem scheme, stance, like et cetera, tempos, pause, we have more than enough to work with. We don't have to get super fancy. And I think I need a gentle reminder that simplicity is great. Like our clients prefer that. I think, I have, you asked about myself, but I have some clients I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do that we haven't done? And I try to get fancy, see what I can steal and give it my own little spin. But then I think it just gets to be too much. And then inevitably what I do is I just go back to the base that I like. And then lo and behold, like, yeah, this program's awesome. Of course, it's just, simplicity is just so much better. And in recent years is I have people write my, that write my programs, and they're very, like, my current coach, Sarah, did my programs for the past half years, and I'm the strongest I've ever been. And I haven't touched a chain. It's been, like, linear progression. And I was like, oh, wow, linear periodization works? Like, what is this? It's just a nice reminder that you just don't need to be fancy. And I think most people appreciate just simplicity. And with my own programming, I just prefer that myself. I mean, you and I both have family and kids. We don't have time to be in the gym for 2 hours. I that. Like, when I'm there for an hour, I'm like, what am I doing in my life? I need to get out of here. But then one of the luxuries of our age, and we've been training for 3 decades now, is it doesn't take a lot to maintain. So, which is great. Like it takes a lot of work to get there. It really doesn't take a lot of stimulus to maintain it, which is great. I'm still getting degrees. Don't get me wrong. Like my knee currently hurts just because I tore my Achilles a couple years ago during the pandemic. So I learned to train around that. So I'm not really like things I have to work around too, but it happens to everyone. But I just learned that consistency is the you kill yourself by any stretch. But I have a silly goal of mine that I still want to be like the most deal. Like I am. I haven't seen any data. I drop off every morning. I'm doing like, okay, I still look like I'm the dad at school, but silly, but you know, I've never competed. I don't have any aspirations to compete. Yeah, I do this as a professional. I help people reach their fitness goals, but myself, I and with my clients, I don't take it like too seriously. Like anyone who comes to a session of mine when they're coached, like, yes, I'm coaching up my clients, but we're also talking like, what's this? Well, oh man, this movie was great, or premier in top four. Now they're not. Like we're talking about stuff that isn't just training. I think, does that answer your question about my training? I think I...
No, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And I just had this thought as you were going through this. You mentioned progressive overload and we all laugh and roll our eyes, but it's so important, number one. And number two, Like if you're a younger coach or you haven't followed just one of these incredibly mundane, boring programs, I'd highly recommend go pick up like 5-3-1 by Jim Windler or get Easy Strength by Dan, John, and Pavel, where the whole program is based around like two sets of five. And you read it. Yeah. I mean, I remember reading it. I was probably like early 30s at the time. Like, no way this works. Now I think about that, I'm like, Dan John's brilliant. Like he always has been. He's just had the virtue of being 10 to 15 years older than us forever. And just the things that he saw and experienced, like the wisdom that's there, it takes you a couple decades to catch up to. And then you're like, oh, now I get it. Because you kind of alluded to this earlier too, just like being in your 20s as a trainer, as somebody that works out, you're always focused on pushing, right? I got to push more weight. I got to get after it. Crank the Pantera. Here we go. Versus those punch the clock type workouts. And then eventually, like you said, because in that day and age, you're measuring success on a 4 or 6 week cycle. Is my bench stronger? Am I squatting more? Versus now we're thinking 4, 6, 8 months a year. Am I continuing to see those positive trends? And I think that mindset shift as a trainer, a coach, as an athlete, it takes you a little while to come around to that.
And to your point, I also think there's a lot of value and lots of wisdom. And there's a lot to be said about listening to your body as what dictates your training. Yes, for all my, obviously, not, I don't write a dedicated program for someone. They're not going to be able to follow it. So I'm a session by session profile just because like business gets in the way, kids get in the way. I'll have a day, but it's just not going to happen. But for clients, they do get that. And sometimes, at a certain point, this is not something I do in the very beginning with my clients. The RPE system or auto-regulation, where it's, okay, we know you're front today. We know you're doing your trap bar deadlifts. I'm going to say, hey, we're going to work up to 8% today. Instead, what I say is, we're going to work up to 9, meaning we're going to take however many sets for you to get up to a heavy triple at an RPE of 9, where you have, maybe today you're feeling great, maybe today you don't feel, but whatever today's RPE 9 is, that's what we're going to hit. And then once we hit it, we're going to stop that, whatever. And then so what I like about that system is it takes away the pressure. My clients is like, they get pissed. Their program says X amount of sets for X percentage. And it feel good that day because whatever, lack of sleep, a stressful day, who knows? They don't feel like it's a wasted workout. Oh, no, it's technically, you showing up is a win, to be honest. But I find that RPE system, it's again, like I said, like we're going to work up to whatever it is, a 1x5, 1 set of 3, heavy trip, whatever you want to call it, whatever you trained, you worked, you got off a little bit and get some quality just in there. Just get some quality reps in, get some extra work in. And then we're going to move on to our accessory. Again, if they leave that session feeling good, which more than over the course of a month, they are going to see an improvement without having to, you don't need to test it at all. So in the very system, you tell a new client, okay, you're going to work up to an RPE of 8 on your bench press today. They're going to be, what does that mean? What they don't know what an RPE 8 even feels, even 8 feels like. Because you and I know if you leave their prices, they work up to what they think RPE of 8, the bench press, say it's 135 pounds, but they can do 10 more RPE 8. Look, it's like they might think it feels, but it's not. So they have to learn that mind body feels like, and then they could be like, okay, now I know. And that takes several months, if not maybe even like a full proper training before they kind of get it. But leading to the point that they handle so that for their ability level. And then we just take it from there. So, and I find that with, I wouldn't call myself based on my numbers, but if somebody's 15, so it's always a simple approach works. It's just inevitably all the younger guys coming up now, like I get like, work, we got to look good on Instagram, but Boyle called, turn a certain age, okay, when 5, I still think you got to be a little bit more, put on the brakes a little bit.
Okay, so something I'm really interested in is that as most people, most trainers and coaches go through their career, a lot of times they start either at a school, at a private facility, maybe they start in a big box gym, and then at some point, a lot of us decide to go out on our own in some way, shape, or form. You obviously did that. So I would love to hear your thoughts, your mindset as you decided, hey, I think it's time. I'm just going to go out and kind of do my own
thing. Yeah, I was scared as shit when the thought even broached my mind because there was a massive safety net that I had being a part of Cressy Sports Performance. Now, obviously, it was a known brand. It was a known entity. I will say myself, Eric, and Pete, we operated under the guise that we were totally fine and cool with us and then all the other coaches of developing their own personal brand underneath the brand of Cresty Sports Performance. But when it came time to kind of turn the page on my own career and leave Cresty Sports Performance, I didn't leave lightly. Like, it was definitely a decision that took time to develop. It took time to think it out. You know, why it happened was, you know, my wife and I had just gotten married. We're trying to figure out, okay, what is our life going to be like moving forward with our respective careers? And candidly, and I think I've spoke outright with this, even with Pete, it was like I had kind of reached my earning potential financially as a coach at Cresty Sports Performance. So it just got to the point where I could theoretically earn more income doing other things than just being on the gym floor for 6, 7, 8 hours a day. So
for sure.
However, what made it a little less daunting was, as it worked out for me in Boston, like, John Goodman was in town one particular weekend. He came for something. He stayed with Lisa and I at our place. We got to hang out for a couple of days and he left. Fast forward like a day or two, at that point, I told him, I'm kind of thinking about leaving Cresty Sports Performance. I don't know if I should. And here's the reasons why I would do it. Here are the reasons why I wouldn't do it. So then he reached out to me a couple of days later saying he got this email from this individual who owned or ran a small training studio that was literally a mile and a half from where I was living in Boston. And
I started
thinking about it. I met up with her. I was like, if I were to maybe kind of dip my toes here and maybe do a day or two where I was like, okay, I'm going to see if I can just kind of build something on my own here. So basically it was a subletting situation. So when she wasn't there using the space, it would just be my space to use. I would pay her an hourly rate to use the space and I could just do what I want. And we came to a conclusion that it would work, assuming that I'd be able to bring in my own equipment. Like, I had to purchase like a squat rack and some barbells and some power blocks and just to get started. And that made it super easy because there was no overhead for me. There was limited risk.
Yeah.
So really the only risk I had was the only overhead I had was to pay for what I was using. And then I had to know. And the other part of this that made it somewhat less daunting was, like, when I remember announcing or put it out on my website that I was thinking about just doing it a couple days a week on my own in Boston. I'm taking personal training clients. I had 10, 15 people ready to go out of the gate. So, yeah, and that came with career capital. You know, that's because there was years of writing and coaching and that allowed me the opportunity to the luxury of that happening. So that made it a little less daunting. So eventually we made the announcement that I was going to leave Cresty Sports Performance outright. And I ended up doing my own thing in Boston. Fast forward, I don't know, maybe 6 months, the woman who I was subletting from told me that she was not going to renew the lease. And during that time, I had also made a connection with her with another coach that I knew. So there was me and this other coach that were subletting from her.
Right.
And it was perfect because I figured out, okay, how much money do I want to make at coaching? How many clients do I need to make that happen? And how many hours a week do I need to be coaching to make that happen? I figured that out. I did the math on a piece of paper and figured out, okay, these are the days a week that I want to coach. These are the days a week that I want to stay home and do admin and programming and writing. I figured out my schedule, like what would work. And it worked out great. And it ended up being, coaching wise, I was spending half the time coaching, but making triple the money being on my own. So it was like, that was great. And then I helped her find another coach who was also using the same space. So when she left or said she was going to leave, I did the math. I was like, okay, well, if I take over the lease, so here's what the overhead is for the rent for the monthly use of this space. I know what I'm making as a trainer. If I brought in another coach, if the other coach stayed to help me offset the cost of the rent, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
If I got two, if not three other coaches to come in, I would be making a profit from that. I was like, shit, it actually might bode in my favor to take over the lease. And then that's what I did. And that's what I've been doing for the past 8 years. I outgrew that space back in 2018. Like, it's been years.
Right.
And obviously the pandemic threw a monkey wrench into things. Like, my wife and I have started and stopped this expansion process twice here. You know, the pandemic was one, and the next one, it just didn't work out. And the space that we're moving into now is the space that we've always wanted. It just wasn't available when we originally looked at it. And then there was some shadiness. I remember we went and spoke to this guy, the broker, the realtor, the commercial realtor, their commercial realtor. We had ours. And we were looking at the space. Like, yeah, we want you. We think you're a great fit. The owner's interested. Like, he definitely wants you in. And he kept feeding us that line. And then actually, he ghosted me. And was like, I was like, hey, are we still, like, is this still happening? What's going on? Ghost. He wasn't responding. So what the fuck? And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to drive down, because this space, again, was like a mile and a half from my apartment. I drove down to the space and walked in. And I was peeking my head around, and I see this random contractor working in the hallway. And I was like, hey, do you know if so-and-so is around? And he's, oh, no. Like, the building was sold 5 weeks ago to a new owner. And I was like, huh, I did not know that. The whole time that guy was talking to me, they were in talks of selling the building. So it's just so then with the new owner of the building, of course, they were like, yeah, fuck off. We're not interested. Plus, it was still kind of like the remnants. This would have been about 2021. So they were still like post-pandemic. No one knows what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
Fast forward another several months, my realtor, who's a client of mine, reached back out to the management company who was running that building and said, hey, here's what we're thinking. My client and his wife, they both have their respective businesses within Brookline. They plan on being here for many years. Here's their vision. So then we eventually just got to sit down with the guy, the manager of and then we talked it through, and he's, all right, that seems like it would be a good fit for what we're looking for. And fast forward to now, like, we're 6 weeks away from opening it up. So I say all this to say that I had a lot of luck.
You
know, that whole lineage of my progression to gym ownership, like, worked out well. Because, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a time where I wrote several articles where I was like, I don't want to be a gym owner ever. Like, I have no interest in. Owning a gym. I just want to be an ambassador. I just want to be I want to coach, and I want to leave. I don't want to have to be in charge of finding clients, like, worrying about overhead or what the hell am I going to do this. But over the last 8 years, with this model, this semi-private independent contractor model, it's worked really well for me. I'm sure there are instances of, like, nightmare stories out there from other people who had bad experiences with that. But again, one of the things that's worked in my favor is a lot of the coaches that have been subletting for me have either been former interns or former employees of Cressy. So I knew the pedigree of the coaching.
The quality
was going to be great. And I have a really great network of people I know in Boston. I mean, Boston is saturated with great coaches. I mean, there's Boyle, there's Reinhold, there's me, I know many great places around here, and they know many great coaches too. So this new endeavor, this expanded endeavor of Core Collective, wow, it's going to, don't get me wrong, I'm clenching my sphincter quite a bit. I'm just preparing for, what might happen, but it got to the point where, you know, being married to a psychologist has its benefits. I'm not someone that enjoys talking about my feelings, but what I love about my wife and what I love about what she does is she talks me off the ledge. Like, she is awesome at business. She's, babe, this makes sense. Like, you've grown this business. You've outgrown the space. Like, you had these coaches interested in coming with you. And we with the build out, we made sure it's like, hey, I think the important part here is we don't necessarily need somebody to take this office space right away on day one, but the fact that it's there and it can generate revenue down the road is important. So as more people are in the space and we get interest, like, that space is there. If there's a chiro that wants to come in and do a couple days a week, it's there. And the way we set up the pricing structure on the training side, my side, like, people are going to be paying the hours that they use the space. And it titrates down as they get more business. So it's going to start X amount for their rent. And as they get more clients and do more hours, that rate goes lower until eventually what my goal is that has everyone paying an unlimited one fee for unlimited use of the space. And then on the therapy side, their rent's going to be based on use of the day. So they have to rent the space for the day. And then again, the more days they rent, the rent is reduced. So then, Yeah, it's just we're just keeping our fingers crossed. Like I've done the math like more than I can imagine as far as, okay, here's what our costs are, here's what's coming in. I think the industry is gravitating towards that model where you have a consortium of like-minded individuals who want it, like who are competent, great. They're there to do well with their clients, but they want to be around. I like the idea of if I'm with a client and they're having a certain issue, I like being able to go out to the door, to the physical therapy clinic or around the corner and be like, hey, I have this issue with a client. What are your thoughts on this? Or
yeah,
I love the idea of having like in services where Lisa comes out and talks about how to better motivate your clients, or the pelvic floor therapist comes out and says, hey, when you're working with postpartum clients, like here's what to avoid, here's what you should be doing. I love this idea. And I think when I know that as when people start off in this industry, usually the progression is you start off as a commercial trainer at a commercial gym and you putter out, like you get overworked, you burn out, and either you just move on with your life and go to something else, or you think like the golden ticket is owning your own gym. And that's not necessarily the case. It's just not.
Yeah.
So with this model, it's okay, well, why don't we provide the space and provide the name recognition and the overhead, and you come in and just run your own show, charge what you want to charge. You're going to be vetted. Like I'm vetting everyone that comes into the space. Like
sure,
and crush it. Like I want you to thrive. The happier you are, and the more money you make, and then that's helping me. Like
yeah.
So
yeah,
I really think that there. I see this model more and more popping up, where it's like,
yeah,
it's just less daunting of a situation for a lot of trainers and coaches who otherwise don't have the means to open up their own gym and have all that overhead weighing on them. So that's the idea of the collectives. They're kind of like sharing the...
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
You don't want to say burden, but burden, that's kind of what it is, right? Sharing the monetary burden.
So, I mean, my wife and I are the ones taking the risk. Like, we're the ones that are doing the build out and provide and take... like putting all the equipment in and the flooring, and we're the ones that signed the 10-year lease. So it is on us, but you know, it's nice knowing that, we're like this close to signing the PT clinic that's making a satellite location there, which is going to help. We have a pelvic floor therapist coming in July, and it's just knowing that net is there. And then, then that's going to allow me, it's all about scaling, right? I mean, part of the reason why a lot of the coaches that are with me currently we're unable to make more money is because there can only be one coach in my current space. It's 500 square feet. So now there can be two, three, maybe four coaches on the floor at the same time. There's more available hours, more people could be in the space. So myself included. So hopefully if you ever have me back on the show, I won't be like crying. I'll be hopefully elaborating on more of what's going well. So no, we're excited. Yeah. I think it's going to be a cool spot. Like I definitely envision a lot of hip hop being played and people like getting after it there. But then I think too, with the color scheme and the way it's going to look, I'm hoping people will be an enjoyable experience for them.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think there's so many great lessons in there. I wrote down number one, the idea of starting small. Everybody wants to start with the 20,000 square foot, fully decked out facility, and they've blown through all their cash before they even open their doors. So start smaller than you think and then grow out of it, right? That's a huge one.
I mean, Cresty Sports Performance started small. Core, literally, I mean, the room I'm sitting in right now is our guest bedroom. Core is barely larger than this. And I'm training and I'm working with anywhere from 2 to 4 people at a time at a space like that. Like I did the best I could with monetizing the space.
Absolutely. Well, DeFranco started in like a broom closet or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was like a 500 square foot, like back room somewhere.
You don't need a lot. I think when I've had coaches come observe or shadow, I think sometimes they're kind of amazed. Oh yeah, you're using the space quite well. I'll have 3 people, 4 people in there and they're stationed in their spots and I'm maneuvering them around and making adjustments that I need to make adjustments on. But I mean, I told you that. I honestly feel like I outgrew that space in 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
And now it's 2024 and I'm just getting into a new space.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, you have to wait for we were bummed the few times that we started the process and it fell through, but looking back at it, at the space we were looking at, it would have been a nightmare. Yeah. So we feel like we're in the right spot. We're in the right neighborhood. Like, it's literally across the sidewalk from a tea stop. It's like there's a cafe next door. It's like tree-lined street. It's great. That's like awesome. I'm so pumped at the location that we're at. And the building's been more than great with us in terms of helping us with the build out. And so far so good. It could be a different tune in a second with me, but we're excited.
That's great. All right. Last but not least, we've got a lightning round, random round, whatever you want to call it, but fairly short questions. I just want to hear where you're at in life. This is more the real test of where you're at. Okay. Number one, remind me, why did it take you so long to get on an airplane?
A lot of it was a little bit of fear.
Yeah.
But I think the first time I was on a plane was when I was 30.
Yeah.
And I was with my then girlfriend. We went to Las Vegas.
Okay.
Now
you go everywhere.
Like that. Yeah. I think it was all matters just having the opportunity to do it. I mean, at that point, when I was 30, like I wasn't presenting at that point.
Yeah. So
now I travel a couple times a year, which I love it. I think my wife and I were joking the other day because like I was talking about my Instagram algorithm on Reels. It's nothing but like secret London spots and like plane travel hacks and like deadlift videos. It's basically my Instagram algorithm right now. So,
I love it. I love it. Okay. Number two. Is it Take It Personal Radio? That was the one you turned me on to. Yeah, they are fire. Any other like low key hip hop things I need to be following
now? That's really the only. I mean, I have my own playlist that I have.
Okay. Tony G.
That I've curated over the years.
Okay.
It's called I'm Shook.
I'm Shook. Okay.
Yeah. And then it just says like 90s hip hop beats, like press shuffle. I think that's what I titled it.
And this is just up there. But, yeah. Like what? On Spotify?
Spotify, yeah. But I listen to a lot of, I don't know about you, but like when I'm doing work at home, like I listen to a lot of deep house and chill music. But when I'm at the gym, it's mostly 90s hip hop and Take It Personal Radio.
Yeah.
That's my jam. Like it's insane the amount of tributes that they do and what they like the stuff that, I mean, I've heard that song in 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah. They're awesome.
So, yeah. So they're still my go to.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I used to joke around Deadmau5. I probably owe him royalties based on all of the collective work, like articles, video scripts, e-manual, like all the things that I've created to one album. Cause it's just, you turn it on and it's okay. Your brain's just wired. It's go time.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Next question. Favorite Star Wars movie?
Oh man, that one. Well, Empire. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But of the current ones, I do Last Jedi.
Okay.
What was the second one that Rian Johnson made?
Yeah, that was the Last Jedi.
Yeah, that I really liked where he was going to go with it.
Yeah.
But I know they thought differently.
Yeah.
The higher ups,
the fandom felt like they did not know, and then I mean, the worst part of that whole thing is there was no story. Each guy had his own story that he wanted to write. And so it was not very well thought out.
I'm curious about the new one coming out, The Acolyte. That looks, the trailer looks sick.
Yes.
I loved Andor.
Yeah,
Andor,
that was very.
Andor was amazing. I didn't care for Obi-Wan Kenobi's one.
I don't think most people did.
But I'm excited. I know Daisy Ridley. My buddy Luke over in London, he knows the guy who trains Daisy Ridley.
Okay.
And I know they're getting ready to start filming
her movie, right?
I'm assuming it's going to be another trilogy, but hopefully they'll do something different. I don't know. Let's get away from Skywalker.
Yeah. They'll figure it out. I hope. Random notes. Number one, Kenobi was not great, but there is like some guy. The best part now is if somebody doesn't like something, they just go make their own version of it. So there's a guy that took all the best parts, and instead of being like 10 episodes or whatever it was, he whittled it down to a 2-hour movie. It was so much better. Like all
you
of
watched it.
Oh, yeah. No, you have to go and download it, stream it. Yeah, it was way better.
Is it on YouTube or no?
Nah, I don't think they let him put it on YouTube. No, he had his own like page, and originally Disney made him take it down. And then somehow he like negotiated with them and said he wasn't making any money. And so then they let him put it back up.
But then they were probably like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Yeah.
Why didn't we do this? Yeah. Okay. Last but not least, what's next for Tony G, man? Just opening this gym. Well, really, that's got to be the only goal, right?
I spent that last 10 minutes. That's the next thing, man, is that. That's going to be the next 6 weeks is going to be go time. And then we're hoping to do June 1st is when we open, which is a Saturday. And that's usually my busiest day anyway. Right. We're hoping to do maybe like the Friday prior, the day before, like an open house for like current and past clients just to come see the space.
That's cool.
And I was listening, one of the presenters at Boyle's this past weekend, first name was
Cassie Day.
Last name. Yes. Yeah. Out of Toronto. She did a great talk on like just like gym business stuff.
Yes.
You know, so I was taking some notes from her as far as, okay, what are some things I could do that could help, you know, increase visibility and, you know, get people in. I mean, what's great is that all my clients are coming with me. So that's great.
Right.
But I'm very curious on helping the other coaches coming with over to help them build their client roster and get feet in the gym. And
yes.
So we hired somebody to make a website for the gym. We obviously going to use social media on Instagram. I think one thing I learned listening to her is I have to do a better job of not being scared of highlighting my clients. I think even on the new gym page. So I think what I'm going to do is, because we forget that I'm not someone that likes to, oh, look at this badass thing that my client's doing. It's just not how I roll.
Right.
But the beauty in doing that is that social, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Basically, when you share your client's thing, they're going to share.
They're
going to share it with their
people, and yeah, they're proud of themselves, right?
I forgot the actual term is eluding me at the moment.
Yeah.
But so just stuff like that, and doing like a plus one week, where okay, all clients you can bring a plus one with you to your sessions, and that might get a little bit tricky because I'm not doing any like group classes. It's all appointment only,
right?
Either one on one or semi private training. So I don't want to play that game where it becomes there's too many offerings. I like to just keep it one thing. Like you come here to get coached.
Yes.
Like the only reason why you're here is because you're getting a session with a coach. You're not part of a class. You're not part of a bigger group. So I don't know. We'll have to see if that plus one idea will work or not.
Yeah.
But I think people are going to be, I think I'm going to get a lot of joy and seeing the reactions of my clients of what the new space looks like.
Oh, sure.
Because what they have now compared to what they're getting, it's insane.
It's like Motel 8 to the Four Seasons, man.
Basically, yeah. So it's going to be, I'll take a lot of pleasure in just watching their reactions when they walk in.
Absolutely.
But there's going to be a lot of equipment set up. And I ended up going, I know I texted you a couple weeks ago about that company.
Yeah.
But I ended up going, I'm going to go with the racks. So they've been great. I've been working with them, like getting, curating my list.
Yeah.
They've been great so far. So I'll be making that order in the coming weeks. And then of course I got to put it together, but that should be interesting.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. Well, Tony, man, it's been amazing catching up with you. Love hearing where you're at, dude. I can't wait to see this gym. Flood social. I can't wait.
Yeah. And that's one. I mean, that's a job too, man. I was talking to Luca this past weekend. How he basically hires. He has a videographer come in every couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Content.
Yeah.
But he has people he hires now to do a lot of his social media. I was like, I might have to lean into that.
Yeah.
Because like, I just don't have the time to do all that, man. It's just papers.
It's a lot. Yeah. Well, dude, where can people find out more about you? Where do I need to point people?
Home base is me, my website, which is getting a much needed facelift in the coming weeks. So TonyGenicor.com is where all my articles and social media, that would be the easiest place to get a hold of me.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure I link that up in the show notes. And dude, again, so great catching up today, man. I appreciate
it. Likewise, man. Yeah, likewise. We'll talk soon.
Yep. All right, my friends, that does it for this week's episode with Tony Genelcor. Really hope you enjoyed it. Tony's such a joy to catch up with. I feel like we always have great discussions. We've been in the game for almost an identical period of time, and we've just seen so many things change, evolve, grow, for good and bad in some cases. But man, I loved catching up with him. Love hearing about the shift and the evolution in his philosophy. I love seeing the personal growth, you know, from a guy that claimed he would never own a gym, never run a gym, to now he's owning a gym and he's signing a 10-year lease. It's really cool to see the personal evolution and growth of Tony, and obviously wishing him nothing but success as June 1st is right around the corner, my friends. Core Collective, if you're in Boston, make sure you check it out. So if you enjoyed this episode, please do me one small favor and subscribe to the show. Wherever you consume podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, wherever you like to listen to shows, watch shows, whatever the case may be, go there right now and hit the subscribe button so you know each and every week when a new episode drops. So my friend, as always, thank you so much for your support. Love and appreciate you, and we'll be back next week with our next episode. Take care.